Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting PC Perspective. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code PCPER30. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the PC Perspective podcast. This is episode 476, being recorded on, it's like November 15th, 2017. I'm Ryan Schrout.
He's right. I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
Do I sound okay?
Sound beautiful.
I'm Josh Walrath.
No, I'm Alan Malventano.
We're creeping up into that episode 500. We're literally 24 weeks away, which I guess is like almost half of a year.
Well, we won't do one next week.
Yeah, and we don't count the CES podcast or whatever towards that count either, so.
It's true.
When I say creeping up, I mean check back with us in May or June, actually, as I look at it. Welcome to the show, everybody. Apparently, some crap happened last week while I was gone.
Yeah.
I leave.
A couple things.
One or two things.
I leave for 1 week, and suddenly, shit hits the fan.
The world turns upside down.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Cats and dogs living together.
We'll talk hysteria. About that real quick, just as a synopsis, because I want to be able to... put in my two cents on that. Quick reminder, we do record the show live. If you want to tune in to pcper.com/live, it's Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. You could do so. We have a chat room where we watch a chat room. We interact with it to some degree, right? Some more than others. Alan just can't stop paying attention to the chat room when it's going on, especially when they're talking about him, which is most of the time, I find. You can go to pcper.com/subscribe. And get this page if you need a gentle reminder about the podcast or any of the live streams that we happen to be doing. Just ask for your name or your email. That's all we use it for. We send out a notification, an hour, sometimes 30 minutes, sometimes 3 hours before we do the live stream. Just as a note, like, hey, nudge, we're going to be doing this. Make sure you have all the popcorn and soda and beer you need to be prepared for that. And then we also still have our Patreon campaign running. These are our supporters that wish to make a recurring monthly contribution to what we do here, which is what you're looking at, right? If you go to patreon.com/pcper, you get this page. And like I said, this is recurring monthly contributors. It could be $1, it could be $3, $5, $10, $20, $50, $1,000. Yes, even $1,000 a month you can contribute. And this is just basically enables us to keep having the guys we have, do the shows we do, pay the editors, every once in a while, I guess, to create videos, stories, content, all that type of stuff. We greatly, greatly, greatly super appreciate it. And anybody who becomes a new patron during the podcast live stream and or increases their patronage, gets a little shout out, a call out on the show. Let me check and make sure. Sometimes we have them right before because people know this in advance. We do not have any yet. So again, patreon.com.
No, you will be shamed mercilessly.
Yeah.
By all the talking heads, which seem to be more of them every week.
I thought you were saying I was going to be shamed mercilessly, and then I was more confused about what was going on.
Now, some people like to be shamed, and they'll pay for it. So go to our Patreon. We will shame like the wind.
The Patreon enables us to do things like the mailbag, which is a video series that we do once a week. We answer questions from people who submit them through YouTube or submit them through the website.
We did a storage one last week.
You did a storage one. Alan, as you can see on the stream, stood in front of his wall of garbage and sat in front of his wall of garbage.
There's a lot going on.
There's too much going on there. When there's too much, there's what? Nothing.
It's not a highly curated collection anymore.
Sorry. Yes. I meant the Museum O. Allen, whatever you want to call it.
I'm married to an archivist.
Okay. But you had all this stuff before that, I would wager.
No, some of those shelves are her crap.
Off camera.
Notice though. I said crap. No, it's on camera.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so Alan did one on storage stuff, so you can go check that out as well. And we'll have one up next week or this coming week. And then we also did garbage. PC Per Plays, which is in Ken.
Hey, Alan, before we go on, can I ask you something, Alan?
What?
How do you dust that?
You don't.
Carefully. You just get high-powered fans, and
the answer is
you make sure.
The answer is you move.
You vacuum that room more frequently.
You got cats. It still kicks up all the dust. The vacuuming will do that. Anyway, we also
I'm more asking for myself because.
Oh, yeah. You do need some help. Yeah.
I mean, I have an air compressor.
You glue it all down and then you use an air compressor.
I've totally got an air compressor, like with a long hose.
I cover everything with Teflon. The dust doesn't stick. I don't think
you understand
stick.
What dusting is.
That's just moving the dust.
Yeah.
That's not removing.
It's going to settle back.
We also do PC per plays. This week, Ken and Jim played Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, which is now 10 years old, in celebration of Call of Duty World War II that was released this past week, I guess. Yeah, so you can go watch. Who played? Was it Ken?
I died a lot.
You can watch Ken die a lot. Were you playing single player? Did you play multiplayer?
Single player. Multiplayer on that game on PC is just a bunch of aimbots at this point.
That's what I was hoping I would see against you, right? Really.
Yeah, because you need aimbots to defeat me.
That's true. Yeah, there you go.
So it would have been a really boring stream, actually.
It still looks pretty good, at least on this little frame-in-frame capture. But
yeah.
That was Modern Warfare 4. So before we move on to the stories, the new stuff... I was gone when you guys talked about a couple of things. One, Raja officially leaving AMD, even though I think we all kind of expected that when he went on his sabbatical and all that good stuff, right? Like, in general, in the technology field, going on sabbatical means getting all my vacation time in before our contract ends, we quit, I'm fired, whatever it happens to be, right? Whichever one of those circumstances occurs.
Earn through all that time off.
I totally expected that. I did not expect him to be rehired as quickly as it was, and also by whom.
Was it like within the same minute?
Well,
because it felt like it.
my guess is that
it had already been in the works.
He was going to go.
Yeah.
Told AMD, and they said, "Well, okay, now we need to make this like an official thing," and that's why they happened bang bang back to back. All right. So Raja Koduri, famed bourbon drinker from our live streams. Is now an employee at Intel. Not just an employee, he's a chief architect, senior vice president of core and graphics, essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys talked about this last week, so I'm not going to regurgitate or try to expound on what it was. The most interesting thing I will say that I don't think a lot of people discuss, and I don't know if you mentioned, is that in that title, he is chief architect of the graphics, of course, but also core. Like the main processor division.
Really?
Yeah.
So I didn't know that part.
He goes from having, I don't know what his employee count was at the RTG, he has like 10,000.
Why are those the same person?
Well, maybe say you're Intel and you've been accused in the recent generations of not progressing architecturally forward enough.
With graphics?
No.
With everything.
With everything. Right. So what if you had somebody with a different mindset, somebody who had an aggressive mindset on development in both graphics and core?
Did they create this position
then? Yeah, essentially.
So there was not a previous person that was...
I don't believe there was anybody specifically called the chief architect of the core.
Did graphics and core.
Yeah. Okay. It was definitely not that.
Okay.
So that's the thought. That's the part that I found really interesting. Like, clearly he's going to go there. I found it mind-blowing that Intel said they were specifically called out they were going to do discrete graphics. Not just like we're going to make our integrated really good and we're going to be able to make APUs like AMD now.
Yeah, like actually do.
But they're going to do like discrete cards, which makes more sense, not from a consumer standpoint, but from a AI compute machine learning standpoint.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You were going to say something?
Well, I don't think they're going to do discrete graphics cards like to battle NVIDIA and AMD.
I bet they do.
I mean, discrete in this context could mean something along what they're doing with Kaby Lake G. That is a discrete GPU.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think that's...
They've tried this in the past.
Kind of. Larrabee was half-baked at best as a graphic solution.
Yeah.
What I'll say to Ken's point is, I think what would be more interesting discussion to have is, so assuming you start from scratch and you're not going to take your existing Intel design and just make it bigger and make it 250 watts and say, boom, now we have discrete GPU, which you could do as like we want to be 75% of the performance of these other guys.
Yeah,
that is a thing you could do.
You can do that in 18 months, probably.
That's true.
But if you do a full graphics architecture, you're talking 4 years, three, mm-hmm. probably 4 years out, right? I think a more interesting question there in relation to Ken's comment is like, what will the add-in graphics market look like in 4 years? Will it be as large? Probably not. Will it be as robust? Will there be as many releases and all that type of stuff at a normal cadence? I don't know. I mean, I hope so. I kind of depend on that. But that's a more interesting question. So I think they'll develop the architecture, and then at that 3-year, 4-year window, they decide, where do we put it? Is it only going into AI enterprise servers? Is it going to go into discrete?
Hey,
do
maybe we take some the console refreshes version? That would happen around
consoles
that time.
Consoles would be a good place for this as well, right? Yeah. Like Intel's, they've lost all since the Xbox 360 had PowerPC and...
Yeah, the original Xbox One was Intel. Celeron.
Yeah.
Yeah, with NVIDIA graphics.
And the PlayStation 3 was Cell and NVIDIA graphics.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then PS4 was all AMD, and Xbox One was all AMD.
Like their one and only console win is the original Xbox.
Yeah, because it was PowerPC for the Xbox 360, right? For the processor side.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So there's a lot of good reasons for Intel to do this. It still doesn't make it less surprising. It's interesting to talk about, like, hey, Intel Nervana was announced, which is their AI compute thing. How does this – is that now just a stopover on their way? Is that really more specialized? I don't know. It's really interesting thing. But what I was saying before is I think I'll be very curious to see, say, in the first year, what kind of comments Raja and the team is willing to make about Intel's, like, core processor design.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And if he's willing to say 5%. 3-5% IPC improvements, generation duration isn't enough. Let's figure this out, right? Now, I don't know if he has any experience doing that or if he has the capability, but it'd be interesting to see somebody push.
Jump in here?
You can. You did.
Here's the thing about Intel. They've done a lot of research, and they have a lot of engineers. And they have probably made a lot of designs, maybe not actually, you know, RTL stuff, but again, the research and development, they know how to improve CPU performance. But you can see in the last 7 years, they haven't needed to. And so they didn't. And so a lot of this research that has been done is just sitting on shelves. Right. And I'm curious how much of that research, Raj and the gang, is going to take off to improve the core performance. Now, obviously, they're going to do that. I mean, they feel the pressure because Zen really jumped up far better than I think that they were truly expecting. And so it's going to be interesting to see in the next couple of years where they apply this research and in what core technologies, and will we see it anytime soon versus, hey, you know what, we've been behind the ball, we're 3 years behind where probably we should be, and so, you know, 2.5 years from now we're going to see something amazing in terms of IPC and multi-threading and graphics, because it's a big company with a lot of smart people and a lot of R&D money and stuff that they just, I swear, I mean, the amount of money they spent and what we've seen in terms of IPC and multi-threading
don't match up
in the past 7 years since the i7 2600K, right? Or is it 2700?
2600K.
2600K
was the first Sandy Bridge.
I mean, yeah, it's been small steps up.
Yeah.
But not much. And now this, what is it, the latest one? Coffee Lake or Cabby Lake?
Coffee.
With they added two more cores to it.
Mm-hmm.
Have not increased the IPC, but at least they're saying, hey, you know what? We need more cores and more threads at the high, you know, the top-end gaming area.
Yep. Somebody in the chat room was asking, why did AMD let him go? I don't
think they wanted to.
I'm sure they didn't want him to leave. There were telephone calls about it. Maybe that's him. If he's got anything interesting to say, Josh, let me know.
Yeah.
You know, what I would imagine, there's internal politics that are involved. There's, you know, probably not the first time Raja has been courted by other companies. And he'd been at AMD for a long time. So either he felt like he'd made the changes he was going to be able to make there and wanted to move on and try stuff at a different place, but maybe he had different access or different resources or different approvals or whatever it was. So I'll be curious to see what he does. But anybody who thinks this is let me pause it, is wrong.
For you before you go on. I apologize. And so remember what you're thinking.
Okay.
Do you know what you're thinking?
Josh.
Okay. So when you're at AMD and you're trying to push heterogeneous compute, and you've got somebody like Intel who says, no, I'm going to rely on x86 performance to do that. I am not going to do any kind of work to make compilers. I'm not going to talk to any software guys about doing any kind of heterogeneous compute because you guys have GPUs that are so much better than ours that can do this work that ours cannot. But you know what? I've got 80 to 85% of the market share, and I'm going to push x86. And finally, it starts dawning on them, especially with NVIDIA getting into HPC and their products really starting to do some really interesting things. Intel finally thought, you know what? We're really behind the ball here. And there's a reason why we did not want to go to heterogeneous, because if we introduced a software ecosystem that will really leverage that, we're going to be behind everybody else significantly.
Yeah.
And so it seems like that they're kind of turning that ship. It's like, you know what? x86 performance, IPC, it is important. And we've got some really good stuff here. But agreed. Holy cow, the next generation of stuff that we need is going to leverage both GPU type workloads as well as CPU, and we're behind. And finally, we're bringing on Raja. We're working with AMD to integrate some of their GPUs into our products. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see if they actually put the money and effort into that software ecosystem to get a more heterogeneous approach that we've been promised for, what, the past 6 years? 7 years?
I mean, basically since the day AMD bought ATI.
Exactly.
Right. I will say, what I was going to say before was, anybody who thinks that something drastic is going to happen in the next year is misthinking the idea here, right? So it's not an accident that the AMD Intel Kaby Lake G part was announced the same week that all this happened, right? And if they thought like, hey, we're going to get Raja on, and in a year, we're going to be able to make this part ourselves, they probably wouldn't have gone this route, right? If you're thinking in a 3 to 4 year timeline to have a good product, you know, you still want to have competitive solutions. So they'll still buy these semi-custom parts, I believe, going forward. They're not going to be able to compete in discrete. They're not going to be able to compete in those same spaces that NVIDIA is in on the enterprise side in that time period. So if you're AMD, there's some people in the chat saying like, oh, AMD is going to sell the RTG to Intel, and then Raja will have the same job, essentially. Again, it doesn't really make any sense based on the direction that Intel is taking. And also, if you're AMD, the GPU is still a critical piece to the whole idea of an APU, right? So unless Intel says, yeah, we'll buy the Radeon IP from you and give you a 10-year royalty-free license or something weird like that, that's the only way I'd see it happening. Because right now, AMD's got to be focusing on, we've got 3 to 4 years to take back market share, to build up our software ecosystem, to prove that we can be competitive in this space. Same thing with NVIDIA, right? NVIDIA has 3 to 4 years head start plus all the stuff they've done before to solidify their space in machine learning, AI, all those enterprise and important one, you know, ecosystems for them, which if you saw their earnings that were through the roof, those are their biggest growth areas. So now everybody's kind of on notice. You've got a 3-year ramp. Go get your shit done, and hopefully, you know, if you're AMD, you hope you keep your lead. If you're NVIDIA, you hope you keep your lead. If you're Intel, you hope that you make some inroads in the meantime. So. That's it. We like I said, I know we talked about it last week. The other thing was like Qualcomm centric servers, which I had been mispronouncing Centric for at least a full year because of the Q at the end. But it's pronounced Centric servers entering in the space. We'll talk about more on that. I have a story to write about some of their early performance metrics from some of their partners that I think are going to be really interesting as well. All right, so now let's actually get to the content from this week, starting with Jim's quick look of YouTube TV coming to NVIDIA Shield. This was my biggest complaint about YouTube TV when it launched, other than it wasn't available where I live, which it is now, so they fixed that. The other thing was is Google has this operating system called Android TV. I think that's what it's called, right? Yeah. And
which they totally ignore.
Which they totally ignore most of the time. But then they have YouTube TV that did not have support for an Android TV app. You could not. The only way you could run it on something like a Shield or whoever else makes Android TV. Asus made one at some point. Google made one at some point.
It's built into Sony TVs. Okay. There's a couple other ones.
You had to Chromecast. You had to cast from your phone to it to work, which is stupid. Right? You have these devices dedicated to connect to your TV with controllers and remotes and all these different things, and you couldn't do it. So now they've fixed it. They're addressing it. So now the YouTube TV app is... it's I know it's available on the Shield. Is it coming to the Sony TVs as well?
I think it's universally available on Android TV.
For Android TV. So it's a straightforward process in terms of getting the app. Although, as Jim points out here, there's a whole lot of YouTube apps now. So make sure you're selecting the right one when you go to open up
YouTube Kids, right?
Yeah, YouTube Kids is really what I focus on. That's where I get all my content. The interface. You know, it starts out, my biggest complaint about it is that it tries to do curation when that's not the type of consumer I am. If I'm going to YouTube TV, chances are I want to see what's on now, like live.
Yeah.
And they make that the second click, right? Like to go from, it'll show you some stuff that's live, but also, you know,
some other
resume
stuff.
Watching or what other people, you know, recommendations, that type of stuff. Or if you want to go to like something like a guide, even though they don't really have one in the same way, you have to go one over for it. But the interface looks familiar. You get a guide style format like this. You can see there, pause, DVR capability, all that is built into it. Subtitles, captioning, image quality, Jim points out, is not as sharp as some of the other TV streaming services. It's a little bit softer. I am disappointed in the screenshot he used to reflect this example because it is Kentucky football losing to Ole Miss.
They hadn't lost yet.
You're winning. You're 34-30.
We do lose, however.
Wow. Oh, very good.
Yeah, yeah.
The last 13 seconds.
It's under official review. It turns out that Ole Miss touchdown was good, and we lost by 3, 37-34. So there is that. It's there. It works. And I think this actually – no, this was this fixed recently, the voice actions? Or no, that was a Plex thing that was changed recently. So what voice actions aren't available in YouTube TV? All of them? Oh, okay.
Home screen, you can't say play.
Gotcha. Doesn't support Google Assistant yet. Another instance of Google's
not supporting Google
apps. Not supporting Google apps. You can search with voice. Okay, got it. You can search with voice throughout the app. So there it is. It's YouTube TV. I still think it's one of the most interesting TV, like live streaming TV, competitors because it's relatively low cost. It's fairly reliable, right? You can correct me if I'm wrong on this. Like. You know, it's kind of got that they've got the power of the YouTube network behind it, so you assume it's going to be good. It's got all the locals. Like, they don't launch in a network unless they get all four locals, I believe. Yep. No?
One of our commenters.
Yeah.
That apparently, like, in Columbus.
In Columbus.
They were able to close a deal with, like, the ABC.
Yeah.
So apparently it's not
everywhere. So they don't require it for all those places.
But when they can't get that, you get access to every, like, all of the ABC content, just not your local news programs at that point, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So you still, if you're worried about watching network content, you can do that. But if you want to watch local news broadcasts on that specific channel.
As if it was DVR'd is what you're saying?
Like, yeah. It's the national feed.
So it's everything that station has.
Yeah. Besides the local produced
local
programs.
Local news, local content.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's that. YouTube TV, and we'll have some more on this. Jim has the part two of our cord cutting thing pretty much ready, so that'll probably go up later this week, so you can check out the website for that as well. Real quick, Sebastian posted a review, roundup, of three different Scythe CPU coolers, the Mugen 5 Rev-B, the Grand Kama, what do you think? Kama?
Whatever you do, just get the last one right.
Came across three. Okay. And the Biyako. Biyako. I'm going to say the B is silent.
When did we get into Honda Civic tuning?
Yeah, I don't know.
So here they are. You can see.
They have ball fouls?
I mean, this guy, they have a ninja with two scythes.
Well, that makes sense.
You know.
Did ninjas use scythes?
Maybe he was doing some
that one does
outdoor laboring.
Yeah, if they're harvesting the crops or something.
I don't know. Interesting designs, right? In all different form factors. You can see Sebastian does a good job laying out the dimensions and the fan RPM and all the important specs here. All the way from 415 grams to 890 grams for the big guy there. The latest large tower design. You can see through all the specs. Look at that. That's a lot of heat pipes.
A large tower.
Yeah. Six heat pipes through that
guy. Is that for like a Threadripper?
Comes with its own screwdriver.
No, I think Threadripper is still bigger than it is.
I mean, it looks like a block that would be big enough.
I would say most are big enough, right? So, if you know what
I mean. That one is, not just a square. It's like more rectangular shape.
Here's the Grand Kama Cross 3.
That's interesting looking.
It is interesting looking. I'm not sure of the...
I don't know how well that fan works.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, right? Because now you're slightly perpendicular to the flow of the fins.
Well, not just that, but there's nothing blocking.
Like, so it could just come out the side?
Yeah, if it's blowing upward...
Just come through this area?
It would just kind of come in.
I don't know. It looks like it would introduce a lot more turbulence. Maybe a little louder, but... Yeah,
because it would have to spin faster to get the airflow through the fins.
Like, and then finally,
think about when you have a fan pushing air through, what happens to the air that is surrounding the fan? Think about it in your hydrodynamics.
Well, which direction is this fan blowing?
I mean, down? Well,
it's blowing down.
Down?
Is it? Are we sure?
Yeah, see the fan?
Hey, Josh, two words. Okay. Duct tape.
Well, yeah, but no, I'm talking about you're going to accelerate the air surrounding on the outside just because of it's going to be lower. It's moving air, right? Uh-huh. So you're going to actually
I know what you're trying to say, but I don't think that air running around the outside of the fan.
It may not be huge, but it's going to have a small effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll find it on the next page, but anyone betting for Josh?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's see the results.
And the answers are...
Ibaraki loses.
Grand Kama 3,
nope.
Cross 3 wins. Well, yes.
So the one with the openings on the side that we thought probably wouldn't...
Is the most effective.
Now we don't, I mean...
Wait, is the most effective?
Bite me. Yeah. I didn't even read this.
Yeah. See, it's got lower temperatures.
Let's talk about physics.
I took a look at it, and it's like, there's no way in hell that's going to work. And I turned the page, like, are you kidding me? And it's even quiet.
Yeah, it's not. It's the same noise level.
How expensive is it?
It is $100, but it's third-party Amazon resellers right now in the U.S.
You just can't have that cooling technology in the U.S.
So while neat, has.
It's not allowed.
There is that. So that's a good roundup from Sebastian. Go check that out if you're looking for some updated CPU cooler information. We'll also real quickly talk about Ken's review of the Huawei MateBook E, which is a new brand but an existing product. This was originally the Huawei MateBook.
Yeah, so this year Huawei announced two additional MateBooks as well as the one that an upgrade to the one they had last year that you took a look at.
Okay.
They have the MateBook X, which is like their ultrabook, and their MateBook D, which is kind of a mainstream notebook.
Yeah.
A little thicker clamshell, traditional style. So we took a look at the MateBook E, which the hardware is very largely unchanged from everything I could tell. It's the same exact chassis as last year and all the same components.
Right.
But this year we have a Kaby Lake based processor in it, to the Core M37Y30.
Yep.
Which is a good addition.
Got 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Which is, this is a pretty base
configuration.
Yeah.
So you can get it with more RAM and more storage.
It's a 12-inch screen, but it's 1440. It's 2160 by 1440.
Yeah, whatever. So that's
was that 3 by 2?
Yeah.
802.11 AC.
Still only one USB Type-C port on it, which is Gen very limiting for a device like this, I feel like.
$699.
Yeah, it's
pretty cheap.
The street, you click on the Amazon link to make sure, but the street price, it was $699 when I took a look at it.
Oh.
Okay, so it's back up. So, I mean, you know,
it goes back
watch for deals, but $699 was actually pretty good at the time. I'll have to edit the review
now that
it's published to reflect that.
The So, having used this device a little bit myself too, the screen is good.
Yeah.
It's an IPS, good viewing quality, like good picture quality, all that type of stuff. They've got rid of the keyboard dock that we had before.
Yeah, it was iPad style where it kind of folded up on itself as opposed to having a kickstand more integrated into the device. So you folded back the cover to form the stand. Whereas this is just it actually has a hinge in it. So it's way more stable and can be adjusted to many angles as opposed to the one last year.
Yeah.
It was actually a really nice sort of fabric, like faux leather sort of keyboard design. It actually felt really good.
I will say I've been using a device, not this device, that has a very similar keyboard dock with the fold over, and it's kind of like a pleather wrapped piece of cardboard, essentially, or piece of plastic, probably. The bottom edge is starting to rip a little bit.
Yeah.
From, sliding across the table when you move it. You know, I was using it on my lap on a car ride today, actually. And first of all,
you put it on your sandpaper table at home.
Exactly. And I slide it back and forth really quickly and see what happens. So, you know, these kickstand models have all, you know, different use cases that can be problematic, but that's not different than anything. You can see the origami version back there on the other side. What about the keyboard, trackpad? All pretty good on that regard.
They were perfectly adequate. I think better for one of these touch cover style keyboards. I think a little better than the Surface with the keyboard limitation, and better than last year. The keys are actually a little smaller than last year, but they have space in between them, whereas the model last year, there's like very little gap in between the keys, which made it more difficult to type on.
Got it.
I didn't have a lot of problem typing or using the mouse on this. I did have some disconnect issues with it, though, so I don't know if that was our specific unit.
You know what's interesting is I have on that one I've been using, too, which is not surprising based on how they look.
Yeah, they look
very similar. Might be manufactured by the same place.
Yeah, but when I woke up from sleep, sometimes it would have issues, and I have to disconnect the tablet and connect it back, which is certainly not a very good solution.
What about performance? It looked like it was pretty much in line with the previous generation.
Yeah, this product is exactly where we expect an M series part to be. These 4.5-watt TDP processors, really, really nothing new there.
Yeah.
Marginal increase upon the previous generation, not as good as the quote unquote i7 Y series that we saw in the Dell XPS 13 2-in-1 and all the tests.
Right. I mean, it's worth noting there is a performance difference between these machines and a 15-watt part, right? Like that you would find like this Core i5 7300U and this ThinkPad X1 that you have in these metrics. Also, I think is also important to note, the difference between 4 gigs of memory and 8 gigs of memory is actually can be substantial in real-world use when you have multiple applications open, multiple tabs open. Like even if you're using Edge, which is the more efficient between Edge and Chrome, and now I guess Firefox has done a whole bunch of performance improvements, but I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. Yeah. Like even Edge uses a surprisingly huge amount of memory.
Yeah.
And especially if you have something else open in addition to
and
Edge.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, on this machine, if you're swapping, It does have an SSD in it, obviously. It has a SATA SSD, which if you scroll down, I think you'll see the storage results. Like it's not a bad SATA SSD. It's just sort of a generic SATA 3 SSD at this point.
Yeah.
But I think the XPS 13 2-in-1 you can get with an NVMe drive, so you're going to have faster swap if you need to do that.
Yep. Yeah.
So just sort of comfort.
Then finally, battery life. We talked about pricing a little bit. It's under 5.5 hours within 20 minutes or so, within 15 minutes, it looks like, of the original MateBook. So no, I would consider that a no change result.
Yeah, it'd be a draw between the two of them. Still the same 33 watt hour battery, which isn't very big. I mean, obviously they're fitting into a pretty thin tablet form factor.
Yeah,
but
it was interesting. I went back when I was editing this and I looked at my review of the original MateBook. And I remember talking about, I remembered as I read in that review that I talked about, hey, it was great to get 5.5 hours of battery life out of a device so thin, right? But yeah. Over the course of a year and a half, now it's like, we've already got that. Now, if you want to impress me, you got to go more, right?
Yeah.
So either more battery, slightly thicker design, whatever you wanted to do, improve battery tech, improve process tech. Because, you know, all of a sudden that ThinkPad X1, which is this guy right here, is looking way more impressive. We're talking about more hours of usable battery life.
I mean, even if you look at the Dell XPS 13 2-in-1, the battery life result was way better. And it's essentially the same hardware. I think the battery in the 2-in-1 is bigger because it's a clamshell form factor.
Yeah. Unless it does it have a 1080p screen, though?
I don't remember which one I reviewed. I think it did. Yeah. I don't think 5.5 hours is bad for a Windows tablet.
Right.
However, I didn't see, in my personal use cases, I didn't see a lot of utility of it being a tablet. I use it almost exclusively in laptop mode because I just didn't want to use this 12-inch tablet running Windows 10. It just wasn't a very good experience to me.
Gives a credence to the idea that Microsoft had with the Surface Book, which is they put battery in the keyboard dock.
Yeah.
Now, it's a different form factor. It's not nearly as thin and light and small or whatever you're going to get into, but it gives you food for thought about what maybe you could improve or do better.
This supports an active stylus, so if you were someone looking for that type of experience from a device like a Surface Pro where you were wanted to do a lot of drawing and note taking for $600 or $700, this isn't a bad deal.
And that stylus is $30.
Yeah, as opposed
compared to the Surface Pen, which is $100.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big
gap. We didn't try the stylus. I'm not very good at reviewing styluses to begin with because I'm not an artist. Draw.
I have
so
yeah,
like
I'm with
I
could,
I just vary line widths and go, oh, that's neat, but I don't have any real context for performance.
Yeah, this is one of those devices that I think is pretty good, but it's a modest upgrade over what existed the previous year. And I just want to see more change from that field, whether it be battery life, whether it be performance or some kind of new features. I think upgrading from one USB port to multiple, even if you keep them Type-C and you make me have to have
just
converters,
being able to charge and use the thumb drive at the same time
without having to use a dongle.
Yeah.
All those types of things. I'm with you. So that's go ahead.
Yeah. We have sale season is coming up. So keep an eye out for the price. Like we saw it drop down $100 from where it is now. So I think you could probably find a pretty good deal on one of these coming up.
Did you say seal season?
Yeah, seal season.
Seal season.
You don't know about the traditional
seals.
You don't know about the traditional seal holiday.
He's not cool enough to
seal
know.
Seal season.
He wouldn't know.
Seal season 6.
All right, that's the MateBook MateBook E review. Let's take a quick break here to thank today's podcast sponsor. That would be our friends over at HelloFresh. They're offering everyone in our audience, this is actually a great deal, $30 off of your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use offer code PCPER30. Now, you're probably wondering, what is HelloFresh? I didn't tell you that before the ad actually started. HelloFresh is a food delivery service that they send you all the ingredients and you prepare the meal yourself, fresh, eat accordingly, right? So
so it's not like Hello Kitty.
No. That's a children's cartoon. This is a food delivery service.
You wouldn't want to eat that.
No.
Hello Kitty, you came in a box. Let me
anytime somebody ships you a cat,
kitty.
That would be bad. Don't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
So what's interesting about HelloFresh from other options is they have some really cool stuff. So one, you can choose your delivery day that works, right? It's going to vary based on your region, but you're not stuck with one particular delivery day where they give you a box. And inside that box is all the ingredients you need, including perishables, right? Because they ship it all in with ice packs and coolers and all that kind of stuff built into it. All the packaging is fully recyclable. It's pre-measured in labeled meal kits. So you know which ingredients go with which meals. Delivered to the door, it's insulated, it's recyclable. They have a pretty good selection of stuff, right? So they have three plans: classic, veggie, and family. Classic is, you know, meat, fish, produce, seasonal produce, vegetarian. Veggie is obviously vegetarian based, and then family is stuff that may be more kid friendly, probably leaving out some either spicy ingredients or things that maybe kids wouldn't be attuned for. We cooked one of these meals, my wife and I, last week. It was the crushed peppercorn steak. So they give you the steak, right? It's already...
Ooh, that's good.
It was really good. Yeah. It was. And, you know, they give you all the directions. It's easy to cook, right? They pride themselves on like 20 to 30 minute meal prep times. They have some options that are like single skillet, right? So you kind of mix things in at different times. Mm-hmm. It's easier cleanup, easier prep. I am totally for that. For me, this is perfect. I didn't have any experience cooking. I don't have a whole lot of like free time to go peruse the grocery store every third day to make sure I have all the right ingredients for what I'm going to make. So they send everything. They also don't send too much, so you're not wasting. Everything is portioned. I really like the three meals you get in the box. Each meal is in one bag inside of that, so you just put the three bags in the refrigerator. Hmm. Yeah, on the cool day you want to take it, you take it out and you just lay it out on the counter and you start prepping all your veggies and doing all the stuff you're going to do. Hmm. And it's actually really, really easy to use. And apparently each week there is a 20-minute meal on the classic menu. So in those instances when you're in a hurry, that's super awesome. You know, they mention in here like the excitement of cooking, which when you read it on paper sounds dumb, perhaps. But it's actually real. Like, I never cooked before, and through going through – cooking delivery services, like you learn how to cook, you learn how to prepare meals, and it's stuff you can apply to other things in your life, right? Perfect. So depending on what meal plan you get, I think you get what, up to three, is that what it is? You can probably go more.
I think
than
you
that.
Do more. I think three is the low tier.
Three is that. Yeah. So like, you know, you're gonna have other days, you still need to eat the other 4 days of the week, so now you can apply those techniques that you've learned, and they teach you, and all the directions are, you know, they have photos and descriptions, so it's well organized, super easy. It helps me, you know, not prepare spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah, yeah. Like, you don't...
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, you put them in a little binder, and you're like, hey, you know, I really enjoyed this with my wife, or I really enjoyed this with my wife and two kids. Yeah. And so I'm keeping this, and it's really easy to source out the basics to make a pretty good meal.
I think the learning and the convenience and some all that kind of mixes into making it, I think, a really worthwhile service. It's something that we've used for a long time.
I've subscribed to it since June personally,
and they weren't sponsoring the show.
No,
then.
They
Ken
weren't.
Loved it.
My girlfriend and I love it. It's taught us a lot of cooking techniques. We're actually reflecting on that back over the weekend. Like, wow, like we've learned a lot from this about what not to do and what to do. And it, like Josh says, we have that binder full of recipes. Actually, you can go back
and
get...
You have the binder full of women?
Well, yeah, that too.
What?
You can actually go back and get the PDFs of any recipe you want that you were subscribed for.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I also have them sitting in Google Drive. So if we're talking very about cool what to do for dinner, I can just pull up Google Drive and be like, oh, that sounds pretty good.
So this is HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com. Use the code PCPER30. You get $30 off of your first week of deliveries. Go give them a shot. We really like them. I think it's super convenient, and it's for me, has helped me. Like, hey, we're not going out to eat as much. We're not eating garbage food all the time. We're not just having spaghetti every third day, you know, those types of things. Big help for me. So thanks to our friends over at HelloFresh for sponsoring us, I guess. All right, let's get into stuff. Jeremy posted this up about keeping your Threadripper properly watered. This is a story from our buddy Kyle over at Hard OCP, where they used a Fantech Glacier C399A, which looks ginormous.
Also a nice looking water block.
It is, yeah. What they come up with?
You
Jeremy?
Can't even see the Frag Harder disco lights that are part of it.
Well, let me click over, and I would like to see those, obviously. All right, what do you got? What do you got for me, Jeremy? What's this about?
It's look decently performing and relatively good for sort of a beginner in some ways and sort of bad in others. So there's no input or output. Those connectors don't care. It'll work either way. But as you can see on the connecting, and yeah, it's got a very, very nice
very shiny
plate there. But you can see the how the connectors slide.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do see that.
So yeah. Kyle had a couple of issues, like nothing that completely broke the deal, but they came a little bit loose while he was working on the system and had to be reset a couple of times. So it's definitely worth noting about that.
It seems odd that they would slide since it's Threadripper specific, right? Like the block is bigger than every other CPU.
Unless so they're trying to make the bracket reversible.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you just put it around the other way? In the right spot?
I don't know the answer to that.
I do not know the answer either. And it could just be a matter of that's how they had parts lying around.
Yeah. LEDs, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Not just LEDs, but disco lights. And overall, I mean, it performed within a degree Celsius of the XSPC tier for RayStorm, which is a wee bit more expensive.
$99 on Newegg, not too bad.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But they've gone through a lot of these water coolers for Threadripper, and you know, there's only been one that kind of sort of went blah,
right?
And I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Yeah, so their comparison here, you know, not. I mean, the XSPC was a little bit, the TR4 RayStorm was a little bit better, but you know, by one full degree.
I'd really like to get our hands on that Enermax all-in-one. I've heard some really good things about that.
The LickTech.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the what?
LickTech.
LickTech. Oh, interesting. All right. I didn't know that was this kind of show. All right, moving on.
How did you not?
Well, Josh is here again this week, so that's true. Yeah. So this week in Denver is the supercomputing conference going on. NVIDIA had a press conference here. Scott wrote up a story about what they did here. And essentially,
NVIDIA. Do you know what the biggest problem with SC is? Because EuroSC was going on at the same time, and they had vendors giving out free Scotch samples.
That's disappointing.
Do you think they did that here?
No. The only time I've been to a show where they give away free liquor was CES several years ago, and then they got shut down.
Did they run out, or did they get shut down?
They got shut down. A Russian antivirus company was giving away flasks of vodka. Defender.
Yeah, I was going to say, Josh has that within arm's reach for sure.
Show Josh.
Arm's reach.
He still has it.
I think I still have that somewhere,
too. Does it
still
have vodka in it?
No.
Interesting.
I think that vodka was gone before he left the hall.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's why I left the my camera.
Nice. Oh, see? That's why you left your camera. You were
but toasted. Somehow I got it back.
Yep.
So at the SC17 here in the United States, Jensen came up on stage, talked about some new announcements for the data center. Obviously, data center is a huge area of growth. They claim 109% year-over-year data center growth in this area. Obviously, it goes back to some of the stuff we talked about at the beginning of the show. They announced, Japan was the first to adopt NVIDIA Volta for ABCI supercomputer, which was 4,352 Tesla V100 GPUs, which is a lot. It's a considerable amount. They also announced what is probably more significant is the, what do they call it?
NVIDIA GPU Cloud.
NVIDIA GPU Cloud. Maybe not the best.
The NGC.
NGC. Okay, that sounds better, right? This is essentially a containerized system for it. Are they offering their own cloud compute for AI machine learning?
No. Customers? So it's actually way more universal than that. Okay. What NVIDIA is pledged to do is for a whole bunch of different fields like AI, like high performance compute applications, like medical applications, to create and maintain Docker containers with the most up-to-date software versions, driver stack that will just work. So you can run your tensor code on one of these Docker images that you launch on any cloud provider, and it will just run. You don't have to worry about setting up the dev environment. And they've committed to doing this for the rest of their lives.
Not just committed to doing
like
it.
Like the thing he said, until they did, as long
until
as they
live. Until
we
don't do this anymore.
For as long as they live it. Is the quote he used several times.
But the more important thing that they're committing to is optimizing it. So not just, I mean, you can have a thing that just works, but right. not necessarily optimally.
Right? Yeah. Well,
so they're a big push also on this. You know,
they say they're going to optimize it, but that doesn't mean they're going to take their existing driver stack and optimize that. They're saying the containers are optimized for this compute.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, they can make certain optimizations to the container based on knowing you're going to launch it on a Volta instance at AWS, right? They can make certain assumptions about the hardware and make the pipeline fully optimized. They showed a little demo of logging in and like the container directory, and it all seemed to work pretty well. It's just you pull a Docker image, and they're monthly, so you pull like 17.10 for October, and it's just updated with the full CUDA stack and all the software you need. Seemed to be pretty convenient if you're getting into this sort of development.
Yeah.
For somebody who I don't pay as close attention to this yet as I should, and I don't have the full understanding, and as Amazon's ad on our website is recommending me 4 books, Data Center for Beginners, Implementing Oracle Integration Cloud Services, Data Center those. Handbook, and Industry Playbook, Data Center Colocation. it's just clear from watching, like, look at what Intel has announced recently. Look at what AMD has announced recently. Mm-hmm. Then look what NVIDIA has announced. NVIDIA is not announcing, we're entering this market. They're announcing, like, we have all the tools for
solution.
You to just run today.
Yeah.
Right? And that is the powerful thing that they've had this huge head start on. It's not that their GPUs are that much better or that the compute is going to be, you know, like, if Intel were willing to sell you their Nervana chip at half the cost and it matched price per perf, that's not even enough, right? Catching up to being able to do things like this.
Yeah, that's an extreme amount of work that's gone into getting them where they're at now. Yeah.
So where this came from, Jensen's grand story about the whole thing, which obviously may not be the entire development side, Michael, is that they had a bunch of teams working on a bunch of different projects, like autonomous driving and stuff like that. And they would find the developers who were supposed to be writing code would spend a week and a half building a new system with some GPUs in it and then setting up the dev environment and then never upgrading the software to take advantage of new stuff because you don't touch it and it works as you do for a lot of dev environments.
Yeah, we know about that.
And so they're like, well, we'll just cut out the middleman and make this easy for everyone to run their code and focus on that part of the development cycle.
It's pretty impressive stuff. I know a couple of other NVIDIA things people have brought up in the chat room. There are rumors going around of NVIDIA Ampere being the next GPU for gamers, and there's a debate of whether or not like Volta may never come out as a GeForce branded product, and they may go straight to Ampere. And then there's the debate of
would that just be a subset of Volta, or would it just be?
I don't know. That's a question, right? Is it basically a cut down Volta to go into GeForce? Is it a next generation?
Wouldn't it be silly not to? Like,
it depends, right? I think the question that you have to ask about Volta is it optimized for home performance?
Yeah, does it lend itself?
You don't want to run into something like a Vega situation where you're trying to have a product built for one thing spread to a bunch of different things.
Think of how Fermi was released. You know, it was a GPU compute product first, and they tried to make it a graphics part, and it wasn't great. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. Whereas Maxwell and Pascal were very clearly developed. You know, if you look at GP102, and GM102, and those parts were developed specifically for gaming. So I don't know if Ampere is the code name for like the Volta architecture cut down, or if it's actually the next generation of stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe now they're going to alternate back and forth. Clearly, they have markets big enough to warrant that if they choose to do it. But that'll be interesting there.
Yeah, and I don't think we've ever seen a roadmap past Volta.
I don't think we know the next
scientist.
I don't think we have.
I don't know. Oh, by the way, what was the thing we were going to complain about, the naming to this? What was it? We complained about BB-8 being the name they gave to a system.
NVIDIA built their own supercomputer to run a bunch of stuff on in-house, and they called it Saturn 5.
It's just like, come on, guys. You can't take – that's like the iconic –
it's a terrible film. Terrible film.
It's the most iconic rocket in like American scientific history, right? Like this is the one that like my dad built models of, and
we use for something. You can't shoot that high. Like,
our computer is a Saturn V.
It's the peak of all computers. Yeah, is essentially what you're trying to say there.
Stop stealing other people's names and trying to make them yours again. Call it something else. You got tons of brand guys there. Saturn V, leave it alone. And then also we have this guy sitting on the desk right here.
Yeah, there's that.
This is the Star Wars Jedi Order NVIDIA Titan XP that we'll get to in a minute, which kind of leads us into Battlefront 2.
No, oh, no.
Right? We're not going to talk a whole lot about this.
Is that a loot crate on the desk?
It's
not actually a GPU. It's just a loot crate.
Sometimes what I don't know yet. I haven't opened it. Maybe there's a graphics card.
It's a blind box.
Maybe it's a request for more money.
It's got Maltavino boxed wine in there.
Jeremy, can you give me a 30-second synopsis of what happened and why I care and why I don't care, I guess?
So in EA, either, depending on who you are, bowed to consumer pressure and realized that forcing people to spend 40-plus hours of gameplay multiplayer in order to unlock your first hero was a bit excessive, or they handed you a plate of moldy couscous so that when they took it away and replaced it with week-old meatloaf, you were actually pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's one or the other. Either way, I mean, they cut the amount of credits you need for a lot of crap by 75%.
Yeah.
They also dropped the amount of credits you earn in a session significantly. So it's not actually as big a change as it looks like.
Right.
So there was something that might have contributed to this change.
So yeah, this basically blew up into a firestorm on Reddit. It was
a Reddit post. Somebody was basically just like, "Is this a joke? Like, you know, I paid $80 and I have Vader locked, right?" And like EA chimed in, and they were chimed in, and the counter to their chime in was currently 676,932 downvotes.
I think the last 500,000 or so are just because it's the most downvoted post ever on Reddit.
I mean, holy,
like, they had 100,000 before that number came out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the response they gave was just...
Let's see how big their buffer is.
Yeah, the response was crap, obviously.
Like, really.
They were just like, we want you to have a sense of pride in your being able to unlock this character.
It ain't pride.
It ain't pride.
I don't know what's going on. Like... I'm sure there are developers that hated what they had to do, and there are business guys that made them do all these other types of things, whatever. They did an AMA today on Reddit, and it was awful, as you would expect.
There were answers were not answers.
It was funny, because if you look at the top section, the mods for the AMA are saying, look, we see you people complaining that you can't find any of their answers, but it turns out people were downvoting the AMA responders' answers so much that you couldn't even find the answers.
Oh,
they were being hit below thresholds, right? So they had to figure out, like, if you go to the top of it, they actually linked the specific comment
the
posts.
The answers? Because people were burying.
Because people were burying the actual answers.
So this is what happens when you piss off the mob.
Yeah.
Like, just saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Don't get me wrong. I haven't played the game yet. I don't even know if it's as bad as everybody's making it out to be. It is.
It sounds pretty bad.
I know, Jeff, I
was listening to the Giant Bombcast today, and Jeff Gerstmann, who isn't someone I would think would just normally shit all over this stuff just because, they're trying to get one past everyone.
Yeah.
Like, he legitimately was trying to outline how all these systems work, and it's just so ill-conceived and
poor. The comment one of the comments I saw today was like, this is essentially a free-to-play game that you paid $60 to $100 for, depending on what version you got.
Yeah.
And even then, it's a poorly designed free-to-play
game. It's a poorly paced free-to-play game.
Poorly paced.
Yeah, the pacing was just drug out for – what did they say it was? Like, it would require 2 months of continuous gameplay to unlock all the characters?
Yes.
2 months.
Yeah, to unlock everything, it's essentially you stop sleeping in 2 months, or I think someone did the math and it was about $12,000 or so.
Something
you could just buy it straight out.
Yeah,
and the other issue is the price for a game.
If you really wanted Vader, you'd have to forego, like, you would have spent credits on the other characters. So why would you bring yourself back to no money? And give up on saving up for the ultimate.
Yeah,
you know.
the only other thing that I thought was funny, and again, we'll move past this because you can only poo-poo on them so long, I guess. But
no, you can't.
The one of the AMA questions was like, "Hey, in the single player, the offline mode, can you make that easier for us?" And they made some comments, but hey, you know, we had some issues with, because we didn't want people to take advantage of the system, and figure out something. So the offline mode, we limited to how much credit or whatever you can earn in the offline mode to make sure that
like the arcade mode,
you have to play online, right? So, but whatever. And then somebody's comment was like, yeah, but if you're willing to pay, you don't pace us out at all,
right?
Like you can pay for to go way past what they'll let you do in the arcade mode offline version. So
yeah,
and there was a really interesting video that I came across today. Was they were comparing they said during the AMA that matchmaking is an effect that says, you know, even if you have a level one Boba Fett and a fully upgraded Boba Fett, you won't be matched up.
Okay.
But then someone took...
Oh, shit!
Yeah. So someone did a base level Boba Fett, went in, played for 5 minutes, got trampled, and then took and blew however 100 hours it took to fully upgrade them, and went through and just wiped
dominated. I should do that for science, probably.
Yeah. And there's also the thing where, let's say you've unlocked Darth Vader, which is the most expensive of all the hero classes.
Wow. Okay.
And someone on the map is already using a hero. It won't let you spawn in Darth Vader. So sorry, you can't do this right now.
Really?
Because
really?
There's already a hero on the map. Yeah.
I guess, hey, you can't have two Darth Vaders.
They don't want like five Darth Vaders and two Lukes running around.
You grind this game for weeks to get Vader.
You're willing to pay an extra $50 fee, and then we'll allow you to duplicate the hero for this one particular map.
But that actually applies a skin, so it looks like a purple Darth Vader, and that way they can exist on the same map.
Perp Vader.
No, it's a hat.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hat.
All right, fair enough.
You have to buy it, too.
So probably don't buy Battlefront 2.
It's a MAGA hat.
No. Like, I have to buy it. Like, start I want to play MAGA it.
Hat. No, you don't.
I want to play it. I ain't buying it.
Yeah. I mean, apparently...
Look, I got the Star Wars video card. So, I'm wearing the Star Wars Last Jedi t-shirt. Clearly, they know I'm willing to pay more than $60 to play as Luke Skywalker. Yeah. I don't know if he's an early guy or late.
Apparently, like, the core gameplay and graphics aren't that much better than the original Battlefront.
But they look so good.
Apparently, the graphics aren't that much better than the original
Battlefront. Yeah, but they look so good then.
Yeah, so you could just play the original one you already own.
I don't know. Is that one shut down? It's probably shut down. All the servers are shut down. Everybody's moving to 2.
Wasn't a great game to begin with.
That's one way to get people to buy a game.
You're going
to
need to spend 30,000 credits in Battlefront 2 before Battlefield 2 before you're allowed to reactivate Battlefield 1.
Battlefront.
How do they fuck this up? I want Battlefield with Star Wars.
Yeah. This is really simple. This should have been a really simple algorithm.
This should have been the license to print money of all time.
Yeah, why would you try to reinvent everything else?
If Marine, replace Stormtrooper, sell game.
Yes.
Right? Like,
they could have just done that.
Replace the sand with the snow, put it on all on hot. I don't even give a shit anymore.
Obviously, clearly, all these companies want to make money. What if the game was released for $99 instead of $59?
With
either all characters open or very quick, like standard accepted.
They would still have a shitstorm, but it'd be less of one.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think
it's kind of steep ask for a game,
but it's not. Well, they've been charging $60 for games since 50, I was 60 nine.
You said 90 though.
Or? Yeah, but I'm saying they've been charging $60 for games since I was 9. Yeah.
I mean, look at how movie ticket prices have inflated percentage over percent.
Say again.
If you want the very base game, that's $60.
Oh, I know.
If you want the add-ins or the season pass, now you're well over $100 just to play.
Yeah.
Before loot crates and microtransactions.
I'm just saying, like, even
it's not $60.
The season passes were an attempt to get more money out of each gamer, other than raising the base price of the game. Microtransactions are the exact same thing, all solving one problem, and the debate will be: is it really a problem? Does EA really need to make more than they're making?
There are games that do very well without microtransactions.
Sure.
But they don't cost as much to make as Battlefront 2 did, I imagine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, the Star Wars license has to be astronomical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, look at the visual tech, the sounds, all of that stuff in that game.
Technoscope says he doesn't believe the games were $69 when I was a kid. I don't think they were. They absolutely were. You could buy...
They're $49.
Yeah. No, they weren't as high as $59 as well. Super Nintendo games that came out with more memory. Neo Geo games were $200 a piece. And that was a cost of memory, but it was.
Yeah, Neo Geo and Jaguar were the exceptions.
They also won under.
Yeah. Well.
Different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, niche audiences. I'm saying, I think let's charge $100 per game for flagship AAA titles like Battlefield, Battlefront. but whatever.
Don't do any of that.
And have absolutely everything unlocked and no charge for additional content.
I can understand wanting to have some progression.
Well, yeah, no,
the multiplayer.
I can see
like an add-on pack or something a little later on.
But the problem is add-on packs were your first entryway to take advantage of people.
Yeah,
that's when you started the debate of you don't – like you built this game and then you remove 30% of it.
Yeah.
And then so you can charge a form later.
I don't think – I disagree with microtransactions in any AAA title. Like that just – it should not –
It depends on the game. I don't know.
These microtransactions sort of, are for freaking Candy Crush and
regardless,
crap like
EA
that.
Totally not, screwed you know, this up, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Like a good pacing would be like the Lego Star Wars games. You know, you pay up front.
You're right, because you unlock characters in Lego games. Yeah. And my kid could do it.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, over
you
time.
You can sink some serious time into them.
I could do it.
But still, the pacing was really well done.
She'll figure it out. That kid's already set in the VCR.
All right, let's move past EA screwing things up. Let's talk about other stuff.
Lower the blood pressure a little bit.
Yeah. Visa has rolled out Display ID version 2.0. Not normally something that gets a lot of excitement moving forward for us, but the Visa, which is the what does
not
it stand
the
for?
Card, not the credit card,
not Visa V-I-S-A. This is Visa V-E-S-A.
The video standards guys.
Yeah. What the hell does it stand for?
I'm not sure it does.
It's an acronym. It's an acronym.
Somebody figured it out.
Video Electronic Standards Association.
There you go. The standards.
I wasn't sure if it was electronics or engineers, so I wanted to double check.
So the new Display ID 2.0 adds in support for 4K information, HDR specifications, other stuff for adaptive sync.
Yeah.
Adaptive
sync above 120, which I guess wasn't part of the spec before, even though people were doing it anyway, right? Like, we have, you know, FreeSync panels that go higher than 120.
So the hope is that graphics, TVs, displays, you know, these kind of color and imaging standards all now can be a little bit easier to understand.
And hopefully implemented in more things.
Yeah. So
have your TV go 120 hertz would be nice.
Jeremy wrote this up, but he wrote here, you know, standard describes how manufacturers can use modular data block design to send clear information about their device's capabilities to the hardware powering the display, and thus all kinds of magic can occur.
Yes. Because EIDE didn't have to worry about that HTC Vive now, did it?
No. Right. And there was a lot of hacks to get stuff like that to really work as these displays move forward. So it's nice to see this change happening. I think adaptive sync is kind of a thing, you know, the G-Sync, FreeSync to battle, but we're not going to get into today. I'm more interested to see how this fixes the HDR crap, right?
If at all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping it will. The question is how long does it take to implement this in displays and in devices, whether it be, you know, Xbox, Blu-ray players, Shields, whatever it is. Is this a hardware upgrade? Is this a software-only upgrade? Like, how can you do all these types of things? So,
and this is not the fix in any way for fixing, like, Windows 10 support for HDR or something like that. That's not... that's the OS-level, like, color space switching thing.
Yeah, but it could help Windows understand exactly the specifications of the display, and then it would be able to do its own thing.
Yeah.
Right? But yes, it's something still needs to be fixed on the software side.
Yeah, all that fixes there is it removes you having to tell the OS that, hey, this is an HDR panel.
Right, and this is the spec, and these are the specifications up there. So, Jeremy also wrote up that the phones are taking all the DRAM. That's probably not good, right?
That's not what I wrote.
Oh, phones are taking all the DRAM.
All the DRAM
memory.
Oh, sorry.
Not DRAM.
I was trying to prevent the ATM machine mistake. That's all. You know.
He was trying to be comical.
No, I get it. So this is an Inquirer story, I guess.
Yeah, and it follows the same trend that I've been posting about once a quarter for the last year and a bit now. RAM prices is going up because supply is far outstripped by demand, and so they can charge whatever they want, which, you know, if you're Samsung or Hynix or Micron or any of the other players is bloody wonderful
because
you can charge whatever you like.
Yeah.
And it has, in a way, exacerbated the issue because they've had this extra money, so now they're retooling their fabs for new memory technology, which has also slowed down production. in some cases, we're going to see that come around again mid next year. But for some of the new fabs that they're building, it's like 2020 or so. So in the meantime, stop upgrading your damn cell phone every single time if you want your memory to go cheaper for your PC, because they pay more. They pay a higher premium than most PC makers, and so they're a more attractive company or a more attractive customer.
Yeah, same applies for NAND flash memory. I mean, we're probably getting close to a point where people have like a larger NAND-based SSD in their phone than they do in their PC. Average person,
yeah, right? 256 gig iPhone.
Yeah,
I don't think the average person.
It's not average. IPhone. No.
Right, but
I think that's more like 64 gigs.
Thank you.
So this begs the question, what's the average lifespan of a phone versus a PC?
If you go average, I would guess it's pretty close to the same. Average person upgrades a phone 4 years.
There are people that'll buy a new PC just because like the OS is getting slow or something or needs to be like.
But I'd still put that on a 4 year cycle.
Yeah.
I would guess they're roughly equivalent. Right? We are not normal.
3 to 4 years before you start seeing significant failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Oh, before we get into our next story, I neglected. We have
patrons.
If we do new ones. Bika Mihal Alejandru.
Uh-huh.
Pledged $3. Pledged $3. Thank you very much, sir. We greatly appreciate that. And then Ken's lower third money edited their pledge from $5 to $10. Is this a joke?
I guess he needs a lower third now.
I joked last week about how I didn't get one, I think. I joked.
Now we got some money. Now we can pay Alex.
Now it's the only one up there.
Yeah, when you two were gone. You were solo seating it.
So I will say that's a good way to donate. However, it's going to take more than $5, five extra dollars to get Ken a lower third. Come on now.
Yeah. That might be discount Ryan Schrote on the lower third.
We got to break out the motion graphics machine and the teletype connected to it.
That's 10 gigabit networking we have to buy for that specific block.
It's like a three-week render period.
Yeah. It's got a punch card reader on it.
Dig out the Amigas.
Video toasters.
Oh, yeah. Our second story that comes to us from Hard OCP tonight is they did some testing of Wolfenstein that is unique in that it only supports Vulkan, correct?
Yep.
Right?
Correct.
Works very well.
First time that's happened, right, since Vulkan's been a thing. I'm trying to remember the last time, Josh, you have any idea when the last time there was a game that came out that only supported OpenGL, for example?
Oh.
Half-Life?
Did Doom? Doom
was more Half-Life.
Yeah. Was it only OpenGL?
Yeah,
I think
OpenGL and Vulkan.
Yeah. Which they added Vulkan with a patch later, right after the launch.
Yeah.
To
Doom.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about Doom 3.
We're talking about Doom 2016.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Doom 3. Was that an only OpenGL?
I don't know if that was only OpenGL. I don't think it was.
I think it was.
It was. Huh. It was.
Yeah, Carmack probably didn't make a lot of
DirectX. They still don't make DirectX games there.
Yeah.
Hence
that. It would have been the API soon to be known as Vulkan back then, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did Kyle and the guys there find with performance here? And I say Kyle, I really mean Brent. Sorry, Brent. Kyle just edited.
This one will quite happily click the snot out of any hardware. At 4K, Uber was not playable even on the 1080 Ti that they give you to shot with. If you dock it down a bit, the Vega 64 actually pushed out the 1080, but couldn't quite keep up to the 1080 Ti, but is sort of proving to be a really strong contender for people that have a 4K display. Part of the reason for that is this thing loved RAM. It maxed out 8 gigs quite happily. Had 4K and probably would have liked more. But the other sort of interesting thing, and part of the reason I decided to post this one, apart from just, you know, the coolness of Brent and Kyle, is, you know, money, guys. I know you're in the chat. The video settings are very strange. Like, have you ever seen GPU culling before?
Like as an option in a game?
As an option on a game.
To do what?
Or deferred rendering. Back to our site, I took a shot of the advanced video. So, yeah, click on the advanced video options.
All right, you know, I'm going to get my stars.
So you've got GPU culling, chromatic aberration.
There we go.
Deferred rendering. And the biggest one, which disappears occasionally, is the async.
Oh, yeah, async, yeah, yeah. Async compute. Yep.
And so they've actually disabled that in the INA. It no longer appears. There is a way you can go and re-enable it and turn it back on.
Is it test causing it out, issues but the second or
turn it off. It's not been helping things.
Okay.
In theory, for an AMD GPU, it should help. For an NVIDIA, not so much. In practice, they did a performance graph a little bit later on, and it's not ready for prime time yet, is essentially what they just discovered, which is part of why it's disappeared from your options menu. So it'll be interesting to see, once they get it working right, the effect it's going to have on AMD versus NVIDIA. But for now, I wouldn't recommend enabling it unless you really want to be playing around with the nuts and bolts of how the game works.
Interesting stuff. Good to see that kind of testing over there, too. Real quick, drivers. NVIDIA released 38831 Wickel for Star Wars and Destiny 2. They actually has some really dramatic performance difference claims in Destiny 2. 25x14... You know, the 1080 Ti saw 45% improvements.
Jesus.
Which is...
And they weren't,
a lie.
They weren't bad to begin.
Were they, way behind Vega or anything?
No.
No?
No, they weren't.
No, this was one time where they weren't doing a catch-up.
Yeah, the performance is pretty good to begin with.
I didn't... Were they listing specific settings or something that this did it for?
I dug around into the release notes, and I could not find anything describing what was going on.
I mean, what do you do to get freaking...
Somebody had commented a line out, oh, Jesus.
We had this just... It was just waiting a millisecond every time for no reason. I got to get rid of that.
Loop in there for debug. I forgot to check it out. Yeah, yeah. So either way, I guess, Destiny 2, good. Improvements there. And for Battlefront 2, for those of you that are playing it and trying to get Darth Vader still, there's that.
I mean, that's better than one card, better than one model improvement.
I mean, that's that's better than 1080 Ti. It's better than 1070 Ti to 1080 Ti, probably. 45%? Yeah. That's crazy. A huge jump. It's on one hand, hey, good for you. On second, what the hell were you doing before?
They even had it,
Sean.
This is an NVIDIA game, and they had a optimized driver out for the beta.
Yeah.
So they've been doing this for a while. Yeah. So what the hell?
They were working on the driver on Friday afternoon and then called it a weekend and took it up first thing Monday morning and then said, ask her out, we're done.
Forgot about it. Things happen. Also real quick mention, FSP, maker of power supplies, but now also other PC accessories, announced the CMT510 tempered glass enclosure.
That's pretty.
It is.
But there's a big old both panel right in front of the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Coming in the side.
Steve over at Gamers Next would have a damn field day with that. Because when they've tested cases like that in the past, and they don't do good things for the airflow.
So there is an open... Well, surely not. Of course not.
You just have to push all the hot air out.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So there's an opening between the front of the case, obviously, and the tempered glass.
Yes. But it's just that the air has to come in from those sides, and fans don't fans don't like moving a lot of air when that vacuum. Air has to make a turn as they're coming into the fan. Sure.
It's more turbulent. It's louder. When they can do it, they might have to spin faster to get as much airflow.
Yeah. Well, it's probably still quieter in the end because, again, piece of glass in front of the fan, so it's
true.
Blocking the noise, right?
But you look cool while you're doing it.
$100. So, and it's relatively expensive for a tempered glass.
Yeah. So, all sides are semi-transparent tempered glass. So, the back panel is as well.
Huh.
Which is relatively unique. And when you look at that front, the shot of the empty case that I put up, that is what it looks like. Your 2 3.5s are attached to the back plate.
Yeah.
Your 2.5 drives sit flat on top of that PSU shroud. The rest is empty space for your components.
Even the top is glass. It's the labels for the ports were just etched on top of the glass.
Yes.
You could tell it was there was space there.
That's kind of cool.
That is cool. The whole dang case is
Yeah. What if you take a glass cutter and cut out holes for the fans in the front? Solves your problem there.
It's like you're stealing the jewels or something.
Yeah.
Suction cup.
Yeah.
All right. So that's from FSP. And then, one more last thing because Alan pulled a Josh on this one.
Yeah.
Micron launches.
Nice.
Micron launches 32 gig in VDIMMs, which for a long time I looked at as NVIDIA DIMMs, but that is not the case.
No, that's not the case.
Non-volatile DIMMs.
Yes. They're DIMMs, but they have non-volatile. Well, okay, so they are non-volatile by some means. Right? There's different types of them.
Did you get enough paper towels before all this?
Excuse me?
Before you started to pull a Josh?
Oh, sorry. No, I don't pull that kind of a Josh in the office here.
Okay.
So Micron launched, not announced, launched. They're supposed to be shipping this 32 gigabyte version of their NVDIMM N, which is NAND flash combined with DRAM. So you have DRAM, but you also have, in this case, SLC flash, which I believe is their Micron like 3D. Well, it's probably a stack.
Yeah,
a stack of dies inside of a package of their 3D NAND. But the idea is, you know, you get it's NAND backed RAM. So you can kind of pick it out in the picture there. There's a backup power connector. If you had this installed, it's meant for a server, right? If you have it installed in the server, you would presumably have some sort of battery pack off to the side, supercapacitors or whatnot,
supercap
connected to this. So if the system does go down, hard crash, just lose power, whatever happens, everything that was in the RAM can be considered non-volatile because there's power and enough time for it to shift everything. Whatever hasn't been updated, it'll shift it to the flash in the background, right?
Got it.
So it's
a cap.
You know, it's kind of sort of like those RAM disks, RAM drives from a while back that would have a battery in them and then like you back up to an SD card. Remember like the iRAM or whatever, gigabyte iRAM?
That was so
awesome. Imagine a way faster version of it that's basically just going DDR speeds.
Right.
Right. So
now, Intel is really trying to find something that sits right between RAM and an SSD.
Well, this is Micron for this one.
Speed-wise.
But yes, along those lines also in this post, I have, because speed-wise, this particular device just goes DRAM speed. Because it is DRAM. It's just also able to speak to flash on the back end.
Got it.
On the flip side, Intel has announced that Optane, basically, they keep calling it 3D Crosspoint DIMMs, but it's probably going to be launched with the Optane name since that's Intel's name for, branding.
Fast things. For
3D Crosspoint. Fast things, yeah.
But they can't call it Optane Memory.
Yeah, they're not going to call it Optane Memory because they already used that one on the dang cache thing, which is M.2. So maybe they'll just call it Optane DIMM or something.
It is a DIMM.
So this is just going to have Crosspoint on it, not DRAM.
Got it.
So right, it's slightly slower, but it's just purely non-volatile.
Right, don't have to worry about the supercap.
No supercaps, no battery backups, none of that stuff. Just straight, you're able to just talk to Crosspoint. Now, we're not sure what the latencies would look like. They didn't announce. They just said it's coming second half 2018. They're like, this is when it's going to come out.
Got it.
I don't think that's Intel's fault. Like they keep pushing it off or something. Like the whole NVDIMM thing, it's tricky, right? You need BIOS support. You need motherboard support. Only like Super Micro server motherboards so far, I think, have been the ones that primarily support NVDIMM at all. Like the BIOS needs to partition out the RAM. Like during the boot process, the non-volatile portions, and basically, it presents to the operating system differently than the rest of the regular RAM because you don't treat it as if it's regular RAM, but somehow you have to connect it to the OS in such a way that you can use it at RAM speeds, right? That's the trick, is the implementation, not just, putting the media on a DIMM thing and just plugging it in, right?
Got it.
So, I mean, there's not even a... The spec is not even finalized for what Crosspoint DIMMs would use.
Okay.
Right? So it's probably, other reasons for the delay, right? It's just not ready yet. Like, everything else hasn't caught up to the fact that you can take this you know, fast non-volatile.
Much less the firmware on your motherboard.
Yeah,
and the way the CPU handles this.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where you know, that technology is it's there. It's been there for a little while in the part that Micron launched. In other words, it's DRAM that kind of transparently in the background can back up to flash. But cross-point stuff is going to take a little bit more innovating. And this is the kind of thing, it's going to come out for servers first. Don't expect to see, you know, anytime in 2018. Christmas 2018, you're not going to be buying your next motherboard with, like, an Optane DIMM to just have your OS on.
Like, I don't think in the next 5 years you'll do that.
I mean, it might be, like, 3 years, maybe.
I just, what's the advantage for consumers?
You would just need a consumer, like the BIOSes would just have to get to the point where they can index.
No, but what's the advantage for consumers?
Oh, well, your SSD.
Oh, there's many advantages.
Your SSD would not be limited by PCI speeds. It would be limited.
Sure.
Basically, the CPU is speaking directly to CrossPoint over the DRAM bus. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Also, think of all the issues we had.
You've got DRAM modules that will be far more dense than regular memory.
And slower.
Because of the crosspoint, the design.
Yeah. And slower.
But think of all the ways that... Think of all the hurdles that we have right now as far as even if you bought a 900P. If you run it on a Windows machine, you're giving away like 50 to 60% of your latency per request just to the fact that the Windows kernel is designed to run on like SATA and NVMe SSDs.
Sure.
Like NAND SSDs. And so there's still a lot of latency that just kind of gets thrown in just by the way that the kernel is just now optimized for
it. That would still exist if NVDIMMs were available today.
Probably not, because anything that would be an NVDIMM driver would have to be poll mode, not interrupt request based.
I mean, you're making a lot of assumptions about like potential implementations in Windows of a technology that doesn't exist yet.
Before on Windows.
We did a hack to get there.
No, but like Intel tested poll mode with Optane.
Yeah, and they can get down to 7 microseconds.
Right. But what's DIMM?
But there's no interrupts.
Yeah.
Well, you're throwing away a couple of microseconds.
What I'm saying is the operating system was still talking to it as storage, but it's still only able to get down to 7. Like that's its
no. You can get stopping point
with the same software kernels involved.
Yeah.
But you just like how
if the driver doesn't if the driver is not setting it up as an interrupt, if the driver halts the thread while it does the I/O and immediately
polling
turns
mode.
But there's
it's different than poll.
You don't have to pull RAM.
You don't pull
it's
RAM.
Sticking mode.
Exactly. Exactly. Alan, you don't pull
that's
RAM.
My point. What the it's architecture? Just there. It would. Okay. I shouldn't use the word pull. It'd be faster than pull.
Okay. Nothing's faster than
anyways.
Alan's digging himself a good hole here.
Interesting technology to look forward to.
We'll talk about this one next year sometime.
Yeah, next year sometime.
We'll move on.
You're getting rid of a lot of the hops it has to take.
It seems to me that there's a huge software step that has to take place to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's
what I mean by so even if you had limbo underneath today, the pole. You wouldn't be able to go faster than what a polling driver with the P4800X could do today.
Yes, it would go faster. Well, because the interface is much faster.
So here's the thing.
But not lower latency.
So
that means lower latency.
So why are we even treating this as a drive?
Your controller is going to have lower latency than your PCIe controller.
Yes.
Because there's
packet overhead. There's all this stuff for PCIe that would go away with a DIMM form factor.
It's all mem mapped in the end anyway.
It wouldn't go away with a DIMM form factor. It's just electrical connections. It'd have to be the interface with which the CPU talks to it, right?
Yes. You can't go NVMe over DIMM.
What's the controller in that regard? Is it on the CPU or is it on the
NVDIMM? It's the memory controller at that point, isn't it?
No.
Okay, it's going to be firmware. It's going to be
how
you address memory transactions at a very low level.
Yeah, there's
and
probably
I'll
still going to be
memory transactions at the DIMM and at level is really highly optimized.
Yeah.
And if you can add that huge larger storage with only a slightly larger latency issue, you're going to have some really good things coming if the OS can leverage that
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Writing to DRM is highly, highly optimized now, but writing to Optane in the same way is obviously not.
Right.
But how is it different? You guys are talking about the Windows kernel and the polling and the interface stuff.
You have to realize...
You already have a memory controller. You're going to load a new firmware on it. And why isn't this... Why is this more complex than just saying, all right, this chunk right here is Optane and map it to this virtual address here?
Because Windows would freak the fuck out if you did that.
No, because the OS...
if you tried to write all of your system memory to RAM. Okay,
let me ask
the OS
this.
Wouldn't know to access it as if it was a storage device.
Exactly.
That's a change that needs to happen at the software level.
Virtual channel SD-RAM. How would that be applicable to this? Highly.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And this is
it depends if you're using it for system memory technology. Or for system storage.
Anyways, I stand by my 5 years. Well, obviously this shit isn't figured out yet, so
we're moving on.
There's one last thing. It would go at least as fast as what was the when we did the bridging the gap chart, and I think we got down to like 3 microseconds or something with the RAM disk.
Okay. Yeah.
Something like that.
I see that.
Right?
Sure.
So there's your floor to like the Windows.
The OS.
The OS, right? Yeah. Like, because that's just a driver now, talking to RAM.
That wasn't something we tested though, right?
Yeah, I tested.
You still had a working RAM drive to test?
Yeah, I just found the fastest. I tested like five or six.
Not like, I was thinking of the Gigabyte.
No.
You're talking about like using software as a RAM drive.
Yeah, just a software RAM disk thing, right? You know, because Crosspoint would be the same thing. You just need some kind of driver to overlay on the OS. And then it would get better as the OS could just natively speak to it, right?
All right, picks of the week. Mine is...
NVDIMMs, oddly enough.
NVDIMMs, right, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
it's weird timing how that worked out, right? It is the NVIDIA Titan XP Collector's Edition with these cool-ass Star Wars designs.
That looks pretty cool.
So when I was talking with somebody about when they came out with this teaser video for these, right, and you couldn't tell what they were. You just saw red and green, and you had no idea. And I was told that this was going to be the Ryan Shroud edition of these video cards.
What?
Right? And I was like, and I still had no idea. I was like, what does that even mean, right? And he's like, well, I you'll like it, right? And it turns out this is what they were. They're releasing.
I've said too much already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two Titan XPs. One with like two, they're two different designs. Not only is it just different LED colors.
Yeah, the
one
fan
for the Jedi Order, one for the Empire.
Yeah, the actual shroud is different.
Fans have different symbols on them. The shroud is slightly different.
Yeah, why won't this?
One is ribbed.
Actually, not just
pleasure.
Slightly different. One's silver and one's black.
Yeah, let's
right,
get this one.
And the Jedi Order one is battle scarred.
So you can see over here. But, okay, so it is. It's meant to kind of look like this lightsaber style and design. It's still a Titan XP in terms of perf. No secrets there. I don't think this is like highly overclocked or any of that type of
stuff. I believe you mean it's the fastest GPU you can buy.
Yeah, sorry. Wow. It's the Super Bad. Oh, I didn't know it had Star Wars.
Star Wars logo
on the
back.
The Star Wars logo is the wrong direction. If you install that in a case.
Yeah, if you're installing this in a case, don't do that.
Sure,
yeah,
but they should have just rotated it 180 degrees.
They should have put lights on it too.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mean, look at this. Look at this.
Oh, it lights up through the back plate. Like,
see this picture right here? Oh, they already showed this. Well, I'll show mine then. It's like they've got the packaging here.
Hey, that's lit up in the
it
packaging.
It is lit up. I will tell you that inside mine, it is not lit up, and that is disappointing
me
right now.
But supposedly
AF.
You can power it?
I apparently.
Supposedly, if you apply power to the 6-pin...
Six or eight, I don't remember which one.
The 6 or 8-pin. Well, you would only need...
Now, that's not on the normal Titan X... Right, what? There's like
that's
a
on the PCI. Edge.
Yeah, there's a logo on the bottom.
No, mm-hmm. That's new.
All right, I'm gonna look at
so
these pictures.
Supposedly,
too.
You can apply 12 volts for probably like
look
low
at
amperage, 12 volts to the
yeah,
power connectors.
Looks like Darth Vader's lightsaber.
And you can do this with the card not
yes.
plugged into a PC.
That's my understanding.
And it's supposed to light
that's
up.
That's my understanding. All right, so.
These are all supposed things. We don't know.
So what I thought was cool about this. Is
if it will ever open.
That's Star Wars music they're singing.
We're gonna get taken down. That was so accurate.
Now I haven't undone the labels, like the seals on these sides yet, and I'm like, I mean, I'm going to,
yeah,
because I do want to figure out if I could, if I want to display it like on a set or something and not use it, then I want it to be lit up at the very least.
Can I please build you a gaming PC with that?
Yeah, in it? We need to do that. Yeah, I guess.
I think we have a pretty good case for it.
Aren't you going
to
get?
I want to be able to see the front of it though.
We just need to find. There are a couple of cases now that have built-in 90-degree.
Okay,
so we're going to SLI the light and the dark side.
That's my goal.
Uh huh.
Unnecessarily SLI two $1,200 Titan XPs. I feel like Jim over here.
look, it's Ryan bringing balance to the Force.
Yeah.
He did the graphics memory.
Yeah, he's going to cut me out. Not only does it say Star Wars in the back, 2 months
they've to notched, get another one they've of these. Notched out. Flip that around. They've notched out the back of the.
Oh, they notched out the back of the display, so you can make sure you see the whole logo. This is really, really cool. Well designed. I'm trying to figure out. I don't know if it says anywhere on the site. I haven't opened it up yet, but is it? I'm pretty sure it's just plastic. It's probably not metal along the top there, right? It's just.
I don't know. Metal-wise. How much did that thing cost?
Looks like. Well, it was $1,200, but keep in mind that it's the same price as a standard Titan XP. It's not any more to get the special edition Star Wars. So.
It says it's a die cast aluminum body.
Ooh.
So, wow. Hey, okay. Die cast.
Jim's gonna give me a normal Titan XP. Look at this garbage here.
Yes.
Ugh. Why even bother selling that?
So terrible. Ugh. Just send that to me.
It's the worst. And we just had, Josh, that was within arm's reach to Jim. It was just sitting on a shelf.
Josh, amazing.
Josh, go ahead and grab yours.
Do you want me to bring out some more dog ashes? Because I've got two sets.
As long as you said ashes, I'm okay with that.
Oh, all right,
he's all in ashes over there.
So I don't, you know, if you're a big Star Wars nut like I am, you might consider buying one of these. Don't buy one if you weren't also already kind of thinking, hey, $1,000 plus video card is the right move for me. but it is pretty badass. And kudos to NVIDIA to like get this license. And I think this is the first time they've done like a big licensed thing like this. They've had, you know, partners with game developers and stuff like that. But this doesn't say like Battlefront 2 across it or something like that, right? It's Star Wars, Galactic Empire, Jedi Order. I'd like to hear about the approval process from Disney to get these designs done. I bet that would be an interesting conversation.
Started it with Ching Ching.
Oh, yes, of course. Of course. NVIDIA has money to pay for it. All right, Jeremy, what do you got?
Well, I mean, say you don't have $1,200 lying around and you want a GPU you could actually use. But still sort of looks Imperial.
I'm going to use mine. It just may not be for gaming.
He's not going to let it get any dust on it, but he's going to use it.
Yes. So there's a decent deal on an MSI Black Radeon RX Vega 64 up here in Kanakistan.
All right.
It's just about $200 off, and it's in stock. Two things you don't usually see very often.
That's true.
It's not the liquid-cooled one. Sorry. That one still costs a titanic amount of money.
Does it cost
money.
A Star Wars Titan XP?
Not quite, but it's getting damn close.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And with the 8 gigs of memory, I mean, if you're going Wolfenstein high resolution, this is a decent card to go with, because up here that 1080 Ti is going to cost you a bit more than $710.
Yep.
So if you're shopping, this one is probably not going to be beaten on any Canadian Black Friday deals. So give her a shot.
But what about seal deals?
Seal deals?
Well, I mean, don't think it's quite heavy enough to be effective with seals, but
a lot of clubbing.
If you
potential.
Crossfired two of them together, you
Does
might
Club 3D
be able
still
to
make graphics
out.
Cards. That'd be perfect.
And besides, up here we prefer using Matrox cards.
Okay, yeah,
you can buy them in bulk for cheap.
All right, Josh, you're next.
Me. What did I choose?
I don't know.
Chose a headset
Amazon.
That you're not using.
Okay, so anyway, I had to order an individual in our organization a new headset and microphone piece.
Uh-huh.
And this worked out far better than expected. It is the Microsoft LiveChat LX3000 headset. It's USB. Mm-hmm. It's got good sound. Mm-hmm. Covers the ears. And it's inexpensive.
Yeah.
Inexpensive.
It's not bad.
What 25 pounds. Usually it's on sale for about $7 cheaper. It's nice.
Huh.
Josh, does this one have
it
the...
It works well.
Does it have the nice mute button on the cord? Like the 2000 series?
I can't remember.
I have the 2000 at home and I absolutely love it.
I'm going to say no, but it's not listed as one of the four bullet points.
Ah, oh, it's so sad. That was the best part about the 2000.
It might have it, but we'll have to look tomorrow.
There is a review that says the only thing is that the mute button stopped working after a few months of use.
So apparently it has one.
So there's a mute button. I don't know where it is.
And it may not be that high a quality.
Yeah, it may.
All right, well, worth checking out. All right. Alan, what do you got?
$25.
Hey, so I need to figure out a way to plug in my camera to a computer to provide power to it without the camera thinking that it was in USB data transfer mode.
Okay.
And it's harder to do than you might think unless, like, you just, you know, start hacking pins out of it.
I was going
to
say, you technically could just take a cable and take pins out of it.
You could, but then the camera would not charge at the high speed.
Okay.
See, there's a trick you have to do to the signal lines in USB for it to think that it's a 1-amp charger.
All right.
Right? And those connectors, those adapters are supposed to do it for you. Pretty cheap. Just a little, Porta Pow is the company.
We've used their stuff before. That was our first USB power monitor.
They make more recent power monitors as well. They make a power monitor that has two ports on it, which you might see like linked in the, you might also like whatever on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually that.
Yeah, I think we have one of those.
So there's a power meter that has one port is a data port that passes it through while it's measuring your current, but the other port does the same function as that PortaPal thing.
Got it.
Gives you power only with no data.
Mm-hmm. They call this PortaPal is the brand. Data Blocker is the product.
Okay.
Data Blocker USB.
Yeah. Data Blocker
with Smart Charge 2-pass.
Is that like
smart
beta blockers, or is that just a different thing entirely?
No, it's close.
Okay, cool.
You can take these like beta blockers.
Yep, and they're fully full of antioxidants.
Yeah. Ion fiber too.
So $12.99 for two. No, is there like $7.99 for one? It looks like.
Yeah, and they make same company makes cords. If you just wanted a cord that just did that, I found those somewhere. Like
so, in this example here, where this person has an iPad attached, the general idea here, or I guess it's not an iPad. No, it is an iPad.
It is an iPad.
Yeah, I don't know. That's
not where you plug in.
The screen route is rotated.
Yeah. This is to charge it, but you don't want the computer to know it's connected as a data device.
Right. Which,
essentially.
Nowadays, the OSs have, like, you have to trust the computer for the iPad to start. But that wasn't always the case, right? So
I can see that's why
you would want that.
All right.
So or if you just don't want iTunes to fucking pop up on your PC.
Joke.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Hey, you need to update to the latest. No, I don't. I don't have to update to anything.
I don't. What's the bit on the top right there? That's $600.
Your logo here, pack of 100.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Get him with the PC.
That's
Pro
actually
logo.
Cheaper. That's only $6
Josh
a piece.
Tech.
Technoscope saying he's looking for an adapter with built-in diodes.
Well, Josh
I think this one has the built-in resistors in order to trick the device into thinking that it's quick charge. I'm not sure what he means by diodes, though.
You know, maybe he wants LEDs too.
All diodes are not light emitting,
but they should be.
No,
they should be.
You should just any PCB you look at that has resistors that just
they
diodes.
They should all be RGB.
They should all just be like, just RGB.
Yeah.
Give it a year, Ryan. Give it a year.
All right, that's going to be it for the show this week. Thank you everybody for joining us. PCPro.com/podcast. Go there. You can find links to the downloads, the RSS, the video files, all the stories we talked about, all the links we talked about in our hardware software picks. All that stuff is there, and we'll see you next week with... No, we won't. Next week, we will not have a podcast.
Thanksgiving.
Why not? What's going on?
Because it is Thanksgiving, and
we already did that last
one. For non-Canadians.
Jeremy will be here to record a solo PC Perspective podcast, Canadian edition. Let's see. We could get him and Scott to do one, maybe, just the two of them. And they could limit
it. At the home.
We can make it if you try.
You guys don't have to record it. Just transcribe it and then post it on the site as a story. Sounds good? All right. Sounds good. So we probably won't have a podcast next week. No promises that we won't, but probably won't. We'll see. Probably not. If not, we'll be back the next week. All right. See you guys. I'm Ryan Schraub.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Hara.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
Bye.